Hello there. You're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Friday, the 17th of November. Today, I'm joined for the last time this week by Duncan Balcon, who is a Watson's Daily Ambassador. Hey there, Duncan. How are you doing today?
Hi, Peter. I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
All good. So which story did you pick from Watson's Daily today?
Yeah, well, as it's coming up for the weekend and I'm a bit of a chocoholic, I've picked a story about chocolate for a Friday. Why not? Well, I suppose I should be saying chocolat rather than chocolate.
Yeah, we know what you mean.
Exactly. I would say it's all the same, but it really isn't, is it?
Yeah.
Chocolate is definitely not all the same. Anyway, so this is a story from the FT about Mars buying Hotel Chocolat in a deal worth £534 million. Mm-hmm. So pretty sizable deal. So obviously Mars, giant company, obviously people will associate instantly with the Mars bar, but they also own a load of other brands of both kind of across kind of confectionery as well as pet food. They own a subsidiary brand is Wrigley's, isn't it? So they own chewing gum as well. Mm. So a lot of different companies that fall under the Mars umbrella, and Hotel Chocolat is now being added to this. So obviously fairly decent cash sum, which is good for the founders of Hotel Chocolat, if nothing else. So they've got, I think, got about $280 million as a payday between them.
Isn't it?
It's a small payday, but you can stomach it, can't you?
You could just about scrape by, I think.
Yeah, I have to say, I think my payday is next week, and if I suddenly call $280 million, I don't think I'll be complaining. So they've done all right with this, which is good for them, because actually Hotel Chocolat has not been doing all that well recently. Mm. It's announced a loss for the year on Wednesday, partly because of falling demand, and also because they were trying to expand into the US and Japan, and it's not going quite to plan on either of those fronts either.
Mm.
So obviously, share price has seen a little bit of a bit of a bump as a result. And I imagine will do for a little while still with a company the size of Mars mm-hmm. taking over. So I think this is a really interesting story, because I think it's really good for both sides here. Mm. Because Hotel Chocolat have obviously now got a bit more certainty, and they've got cash flow behind them, and they also have the expertise that comes with a company like Mars, who have successfully got big confectionery brands into countries all over the world.
Mm.
And so, I mean, obviously that in itself is really good for Hotel Chocolat as a brand.
Mm.
And for Mars, they actually now have access to a higher end confectionery brand as well, because a lot mm-hmm. of their stuff, what much as big name products, aren't really that kind of higher to kind of luxury end of the market.
Mm.
So I think it's really good for them as well. So I mentioned two founders earlier. One of those is staying on as CEO. The other one's retiring. But they're both investing a fairly large chunk as they move into their new roles, essentially.
Mm.
So I think that is good, because that shows that they still have confidence in the brand and they're not kind of selling it to get away from it.
Mm.
So I think that's good. And I think with, like I said, those expansion plans to the US and Japan that weren't going so well, actually, I would say with a company like Mars behind you, you could probably reassess those and have another go, because certainly in the US, there is a little bit of a fascination for all things British. I think that's a fair comment to make. Having been there a few times, even just the accent, I think they find fascinating. So if well marketed, and with the amount of money that Mars could possibly put behind marketing, which Hotel Chocolat themselves probably couldn't have done previously, I think those two marketplaces you could probably do a lot better in. Like, well, I said, with the backing of such a massive company as Mars. And like I said, on the flip side, Mars are getting access to a luxury brand in itself. I say luxury, but as far as chocolate goes, luxury brand.
Mm.
Even though it's not massively expensive, it is obviously a higher price point than most chocolates. And I think that relationship could work really well for both sides. So yeah, much as I love chocolate, there's a little bit more to the story than that. So what's your take on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I'm also a fan of Hotel Chocolat. And I think if anyone who's seen a picture of me, they can definitely see that that I may well like chocolate potentially. But yeah, I mean, I big fan, love it. It's, you know, it is definitely at a higher price point. If anyone has ever gone there, never been, you know, for the first time, on the hunt for an Easter egg, and then you know, sort of fallen down in complete shock when realizing how much you have to pay, and actually it's only half an Easter egg, then you'll know that it is a bit high end. But anyway, I think this is great. This is a very interesting story, which, you know, it's nice to see, you know, like a British success, especially in something that, let's be honest, we're not really known for, you know, like proper chocolate. I mean, we're known for, you know, like chocolate bars, or, you know, candy bars, whatever you want to call them. Mm. By the way, my favorite is still Kit Kat for me. Oh. Top three. I'm a Kit Kat, then Twix, then Double Decker. I don't know if that's a controversial choice there.
Oh, I don't know. It's... Double Decker would probably come top of my list.
Oh, would it so really?
Not that controversial. I love a Double Decker.
Oh, really? Yeah. So anyway, back to the story. I think that the you know, I think this is really good. I think that you know, it's also contrasting story with actually a company that maybe some of people listening to this may remember. And it's a brand, it does sound a bit weird, sorry, it's called Willy's Coco. I think it doesn't sound weird at all, but there's a bloke who, there was a really interesting documentary, and I do mean that, on TV, on Channel 4, like, I don't know, over 10 years ago, and it was called Willy's Wonky Chocolate Factory, which I watched because it was actually really interesting. Basically, this one British guy, and he was going around, oh, I think it was Venezuela and other places, looking for, you know, he wanted good chocolate, and he went around, he saw the farmers and stuff, and he got the deals on his own, and it was his journey to actually getting his chocolate being sold at Waitrose. And actually I think it's still sold at Waitrose, but obviously he's gone down a different route. He's gone down a, you know, sell it in the supermarkets route, whereas obviously this you know, these guys have gone down that, okay, we're making chocolate and we're selling it in a shop sort of route.
And they are quite boutique-y shops as well, aren't they?
Really, yeah.
It's quite an experience going into a Hotel Chocolat and buying chocolate.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I think that they've done in some interesting things over the years. I mean, I don't know if they still do those velvetizers for hot chocolate, which I know that a former Heroic Watson's Daily ambassador, Amy Weir Simmons, I don't know if she's listening to this, but she had two. I was amazed, like, she's got two velvetizers, so two people can have you know, hot chocolate at the same time. Imagine that. So, you know, I mean, they had that, and also I have also had when they've done ice cream as well, that was really good. So, I mean, I think the product is good. I think they're quite clever with the product as well, because it seems to me that they do chop boxes of chocolates and they wrapped in the box, and then it seems to me they sort of swap the sleeves over. Now, this isn't true for all of them. It's just that if you say go there and there'll be a some sort of Valentine selection or something, and then once you get to February the 15th, it almost seems that they just whip off the outer of the box and slip another one on to then swiftly convert it to being a Mother's Day special. Now, that you can't do that with all of them, but I think it's quite interesting the way they seem to do that anyway, which I think is really good for not wasting anything, actually. And it's still good. The chocolate is still good. So it's all good. Maybe they've reached a bit of a ceiling. I mean, to be honest, if they, you know, they've got a company now that's just been valued at £500 million. They're not doing too badly. Failed in the US, failed in Japan, and I am a bit surprised about them failing in Japan, because my experience with sugary stuff in Japan is such that I'll try and explain it to you. So if I found that if you were to have, let's say, a can of Fanta, there are other, obviously, soft drinks available. But on the one, if you had a scale of not sweet to very, very sweet, on the not sweet end of the scale, although it is a bit, you know, is obviously a bit sweet, is Japan, right? On the one end, then you've got very, very sweet is America on the other end. And then somewhere in between is the UK. And yeah. I found that, I mean, obviously I was doing this for purely for research purposes, but for any kind of, you know, Coca-Cola, you know, Dr. Pepper, Fanta, or even, you know, Cadbury's chocolate, that sort of thing. Although actually the chocolate in Japan seems to come from Australia. But anyway, that's, you know, Japanese generally don't tend to like, or they have a less sweet tooth, I would say. So I'm kind of surprised that Hotel Shock didn't do better. But on the other hand, I think that the fact that it's a British make will have made it harder to do well over there, because I would have thought that, you know, Japanese would be looking at it going, well, you know, chocolate equals Belgium or maybe Italy or Switzerland or something. Mm. And definitely not, you know, the UK. So anyway, maybe there's that. But now it's got this massive company behind it. This could be a huge difference. And, you know, it could take advantage of vastly superior supply chains, marketing, all that sort of stuff, whilst still retaining some of its kind of, you know, charm, I guess. Mm. So yeah, so I think it's very interesting. So, yeah, one of the founders is going to stay on as CEO. The other one is going to pretty much cash out and retire. Why wouldn't you with 140 million quid? So, you know, it's although he is apparently going to, or he says he's going to invest, still invest in the business. The other one is staying on, is investing apparently 80% of this money back into the company, which is, you know, which is good.
That could prove to be a very smart move if Mars managed to make it boom overseas and things, because that
could be
140 million could be worth a heck of a lot more quite quickly.
Yes indeed. So yeah, so no, I think this is good and it's interesting, it's a great story, and yeah, kind of surprising, but yeah, amazing.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for your thoughts on that. What was your favourite story in today's Watson's Daily, Peter?
Okay, so today I was going to talk about Cruise, which is the driverless subsidiary of General Motors, aka GM. So you may people may recall that they were offering driverless taxis in California and San Francisco alongside, you know, Waymo, which is owned by Alphabet. Things went wrong. There was an accident. One of the Cruise cars that knocked someone over and dragged them along the road. That, funnily enough, didn't go down too well, certainly with the person that was dragged down the road, but also the local authorities, the safety people, and they've been banned. You know, the vehicles, the fleets have been banned or suspended for the moment. Now, it looks to me like, so I'm taking two stories from today's Watson's Daily. It looks to me like Cruise is assuming the worst, or GM is assuming the worst, because what they've done is they've suspended an employee share program, which lets employees, you know, trade their shares. And they're being suspended because basically they're going to revalue Cruise. Obviously, it's going to go down a lot. And I think that is a very negative sign for the brand. I mean, for instance, just as for illustrative purposes, when I was at the beginning of my stockbroking career, the company I was working at, Cazenove, was bought by JP Morgan. And in the meantime, there was kind of they called it a grey market, where we were allocated as employees, allocated a number of shares. Obviously, I was a mere minion at that point. Didn't get that. I mean, I got a reasonable amount, but not nowhere near what, say, a partner would have got. And then the idea is that every now and again, I think I've forgotten now, it's a long time ago, but every 2 weeks or every 4 weeks or something, there would be a trading day where a price would be decided. And you could, you know, buy or sell your shares, right, in an internal market. I guess this is what what Cruise have got. So given the fact that it only just has been operating for only a few months as a driverless taxi service, you would have thought that this is going to be a massive shock for the employees, because they'll be thinking, they probably were feeling pretty, you know, positive about things initially, I would have thought. So they'll have no doubt been brainwashed. Sorry, I mean trained to think that that driverless is the future, and it's the future's now. And so this will be a nasty shock to them. So I think the fact that the company's decided to do this now, that would imply to me that they are assuming the worst. And then the other thing is to just sort of consider that GM says, although it is committed to Cruise, you would have thought that it's going to be thinking about different options. I think they could sell it. They could sell the brand, but I don't think they'd sell all of it. I think that they would sell most of it and keep some, keep a stake in there, so that if it really does do well in future, then at least it will have some kind of part of the upside, or it could absorb it into the broader business and use the tech that it's learnt from Cruise and put it into more driving assistance, driving capabilities in more of its cars across its range. But at the moment, it looks to me like a standalone taxi business is a long way away. I mean, I know that, countries are putting in legislation and all that kind of stuff. I just don't believe it. I want to, because, when I get to become an even older man than I am at the moment, I mean, I would be really very keen on driverless cars. I mean, it's basically like having your own taxi, isn't it? I mean, you don't have to do anything. And, if you can't drive, if your sight's not very good, or, your movement's not good, you'll still have freedom. And I think that'll be amazing. But I just don't think it's right at the moment. But what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think the key point here is not right at the moment, I think, because the technology is obviously advancing quite quickly, and it's come a really long way. Mm. But I just can't, I think, equate to having a human being behind the wheel yet. Mm. I pulled up the details of this, the incident that caused this kind of recall in front of me, and I was struck by one thing about it. So the incident itself, it looks like obviously the technology is capable of working with ordinary everyday situations, the sort of on the roads all the time. This actual crash was caused by another person. It wasn't caused by the Cruise car itself. Mm. So another vehicle with a human behind the wheel hit a pedestrian, caused the pedestrian to go in front of the Cruise vehicle. The Cruise vehicle stopped initially, but still, I think, just hit the person. And then by the looks of it, what it isn't capable of doing is realizing that person is on the floor underneath the car.
Yeah.
Because then it pulled to get out of the way of traffic and dragged the person with it.
Mm.
Now, a human behind the wheel would sit there and go, well, that person's probably underneath my wheels. I'm not going to pull off. And obviously the technology...
Well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you?
Adapted to that state. Yeah. But what's essentially happened here is the headline is all about Cruise's car dragging this person, when actually the person was originally hit by somebody else altogether.
Yeah.
So it's a human error that's caused this bizarre chain of events.
Yeah.
And until essentially these vehicles are able to be as intelligent as a human, if not more so, I think you're right. The it's just the time isn't right for them.
Mm.
And I think, like you said, with GM, selling might be a good idea and keeping a small stake, because I think you just need a bottomless pot of money
really
at the moment to get this technology to fruition and get it to the point where it can be every day. So someone like Alphabet, Alphabet, probably better equipped to do it, because they have a than GM.
Mm.
And as you said, GM have got a lot of other lines and vehicles to focus on, and this is a small part of their business. And actually, is it worth throwing that much money at it when it's realistically, like I said, it's not there yet, and it probably won't be for a while.
Mm.
So yeah, I think obviously, as you said, all the employee share program being suspended just reeks of a company expecting the worst.
Mm.
I can totally see either them trying to sell that branch or collapse it some way, or they're obviously preparing for some variety of change. It'd just be interesting to see what that change is.
But
I can't see it being managed by GM in the way it is at the moment.
Yeah. There we go. So driverless chocolate is the 2-word summary today. So I don't know.
I'm just thinking. Would you, if it came to it, if you had low mobility, and you weren't kind of good enough to drive in? Well, would you just jump in your driverless car to go to a branch of Hotel Chocolat,
get
chocolate, and come home?
I would.
100% would.
Oh yeah, it's definitely worth the risk.
It's the best one. Friday.
Oh, there we go. Chocolate Fridays. So on that note, thank you very much indeed, Duncan, as always, for your insights and chocolate expertise, obviously. Thank you for listeners for listening. Just to say as well, the problem with the app is continuing, unfortunately. But like I said yesterday, you can still read Watson's Daily by using the login details that you use for your app to log in onto the website. So you'll still be able to see it. It will be fine. So we're still looking into it. The other thing is, and this is the last day I'm going to say it, is that, I'm going to be doing a big talk on commercial awareness tomorrow, along with Jake Shogger of the Commercial Law Academy. We're going to be covering a lot of stuff. I'm going to also be doing, like I'll tell you, themes, topics, etc., to look out for the next, for the next sort of few months, etc. So definitely worth doing. If you're interested in that, please have a look at our socials. You'll see there's a lot of comments on it. So please have a look at that and, maybe see you or virtually see you tomorrow. You'll also be able to ask loads of any questions you want. Hopefully I'll be able to answer them. I'll leave it at that. But anyway, thank you very much indeed. Have a great day, whatever you're doing, and we'll be back again next week. Many thanks. Bye. Bye.